Nation. It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
This is the best 30 minutes of your day. Today it is the Shaka Smart Homer Hour as the Marquette coach is joining us for a few minutes. Good afternoon, coach.
Great to be here with you, Homer.
They say I don't listen well, but this is a situation where I'll listen all the time because I'm sure I speak for everyone who just wants you to try to explain what's going on the best you can. What it's like, how you, there's just so many aspects of college basketball that have changed, and you're here to give us the best junior high version you can to give us some idea of what you do now.
How much time do you have, Homer?
We can go until 11. There's no NBA game, so we have 6 hours. It'd be my last day, but we'd have 6 hours. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think the distinction between what's the same and then what's changed is maybe a good way to answer your question. What's the same is when that ball goes up in the air in Fiserv Forum or at arenas around the country, the same things go into winning, right? I mean, teams that are connected and play hard and play together and care about each other and care about what goes into winning, those are the teams that, you know, have success and advance and do well in the Big East and other conferences, make the NCAA tournament and beyond. Then there's all the things that have changed. There's all the stuff around it.
Well, you know, I would ask as a follow-up, what's changed is the way to do that, the way to create that clearly has to be different because your relationships, your time, the situations that bring a player here are like they've never been before.
Recruiting's changed for sure.
Were the one who said every player is one and done. This was before all this started. And now I think on the outside, everybody says you got to come up with a new team every year. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's the feeling.
Well, it depends where you are. I mean, a team like ours, we do have 9 guys that came back from last year's team. Okay. So I think that retention is still something that's a tool that teams can utilize to be in a really good spot as they start their next year, which, by the way, Homer, our New Year's Day is basically Monday. That's when we start our summer program. That's when all of our new players and our returning players will be here. So all around college basketball, whenever each team starts their summer program, that's basically New Year's Day for college basketball.
Is that any different than it always was?
No, it's been like that for quite a while. What's different, though, as you mentioned, is some of the dynamics that lead to that point as you're building up your roster. But relationships still matter, Homer. They do. The ability of the coaching staff and the players to affect each other in a way that's going to create success on the court and going to create togetherness and a common bond around winning, that still matters.
All right, let me ask as an example. You have somebody coming in from Louisville. I mean, how much have you interacted with him? And by the time he plays, and he's, I'm assuming, going to be an important part, you will have spent very, very, very little time with him compared to the time you would have spent with almost all your players that played in the past.
Well, no, actually, the way we are, Homer, we spend a ton of time in the offseason and off the court with our guys. We still have 159 days, Homer, until November 2nd, our first day. So you can rest assured that Sananda Frew is his name, and I will become very, very acquainted. And probably more importantly, he and his teammates will become very well acquainted. But to your point, he is new. He is joining our team via the transfer portal, as is Nolan Minasali.
Right, and I would add one other thing. He's how old? He'll be 23 in August, I believe.
Yes. Well, it's about time we had an older guy, isn't it?
No, whatever you say, I'm going to listen and accept. It's just...
No, it's... When you go into the transfer portal, one of the things you're looking for is some wisdom and some experience and some guys that have done some things before at the college level. And certainly the two transfers that we brought in have that.
Is it accurate to say that you chose not to go into the transfer portal last year because you liked the players that you had? I mean, what dramatically changed, if maybe dramatically is the right word or not, between this time or just a little bit before last year and what you did this year?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it was dramatic, Homer, because we only took two transfers relative to, if you look around college basketball or you look at our league, there's a lot of programs taking 7, 8, 9, 10. Their whole roster could be transfers. So that would be dramatic. We did evolve. We did change. And to your point, not only this past year, but we went 4 years in a row where we decided not to take transfers, where we decided that we were going to double down on our returning players and our incoming high school players. And I would say, Homer, I mean, you know our team as well as anyone. You were at literally every game. Of those 4 years, I think two of them went exceptionally well. I think one of them went pretty darn well. And then I think one of them did not go well nearly anywhere near as well as we hoped or wanted it to, and that was this past season. So what I learned from that is there's no one-size-fits-all model. You can't necessarily do the same thing every year. And as much as we love the model of retention and recruiting guys out of high school, there are times where it makes sense to augment your returning roster with guys out of the transfer portal, and that's exactly what we've done.
How do you recruit? There are eight, I mean, how many players that are potentially eligible for Marquette? How do you decide what to watch, who to watch, how to watch, all those things?
It is a fascinating process, Homer, because it goes so fast. I mean, it's really like speed dating. It really is. You know, it's like you and I, you know, if we weren't married, we go into Third Street Market and, you know, we're amongst a group of people and then we change chairs every 5 minutes and we're meeting people. It's pretty ridiculous, actually. But
and yet you're supposed to be able to figure out how this person would fit into your team and your culture.
Yes, it's a very intense process because it happens fast. As much homework as you can have done in advance is very, very helpful. But, you know, at the same time, sometimes you don't know anything about a guy until he does go in the transfer portal. You know, we're fortunate with a guy like Nolan Minasali, the guard that we took from St. Thomas. We had watched him play quite a bit in high school. He went to Marquette High, and we had, you know, followed him and learned about him. So we weren't starting from scratch. But certainly, if you're starting from scratch, then it is a race to figure out, who is this guy? How's he going to impact our team? How's he going to fit with our guys? What will Nigel James think of him? What will Adrian Stevens and Royce Parham think of him? Because that matters.
Of course.
And that's why it's, again, a very intense time.
And harder than it's ever been for coaches. Not always going to feel sorry for you, but I can't believe it's ever been this hard.
Well, there's certainly different challenges, but that doesn't mean it's not fun.
I didn't say it's fun. That was going to be my next question.
It's fun. It's
as much fun for you.
It's, well, I'll tell you this. The parts that have always been really, really fun are still really, really fun. There's other things that make you scratch your head, for sure. But we, neither you nor I, gets to make the rules. We don't get to change the rules. And we don't get to decide when the rules are changed.
Right. But no one saw these rules, this world coming.
Well, the one thing that a lot of us did see coming is that for a long, long time, there was an outdated amateur model that existed in college sports that just wasn't going to stand up to the weight and the pressure of the, you know, increasing amount of money that was being made, you know, off of
the sports, football and basketball, are too popular. That's exactly the problem. created some of these problems. Because
yeah, for sure. Too popular and too lucrative to have a model that in no way rewarded the people that doing the majority of the work. So it was just a matter of time before that broke. And now where we are as a pendulum is swung completely the other way.
I tell people I have no idea about anything. But I said, I'll always believe that players go where they get the most money because that's how I would advise my kid. Now, if the money's the same or really close, then I'm going to pick. But that's what I do. How accurate is that? And is any of the information ever going to become available to the public?
Well, how accurate is it? In some cases, very accurate.
Okay.
In other cases, there's certainly examples of guys that, I mean, to be honest, the better players that we've had that have stayed at Marquette, they could have gone on the transfer portal and gotten more money somewhere else. But they valued their experience at Marquette. They valued their relationships at Marquette. They valued the opportunity to play in five-serve forum to compete to win, you know, a Big East championship. And I think also the future that was in front of them beyond college, they felt like what they were doing at Marquette with their teammates and coaches was getting them ready for that. But to your point, there are quite a few guys. If you look at some of the guys that play at a different school every single year, a lot of those motivations are, you know, pretty much all financial. And that's okay, too.
But that's the world you live in.
That's the world we live in.
All right. My memory of last season is one game. I said after in the banquet, the season record was 1-0. The UConn game, because they had three first-team All-Big East players, and the best player on the floor that day was Nigel James. And I assume his role is going to be, tell me what you want from him, how you want him to improve, or
yes.
Because he asked me, after I talked to the four players, do I remind you of anyone? I said, yeah. Freshman, same last name. Did crazy stuff, you did too. And he goes, then somebody else came and I said, Dominique James. And he goes, oh. I go, oh, what? He goes, I thought you meant LeBron James. They told me you don't lack confidence. You thought I was, never mind.
So what we want him to do as a sophomore is a new and improved version of what he did as a freshman. So a lot of the same things that he did really well, just doing those things more and better and more efficiently. And starting with leading. You know, we say leadership is the ability to make those around you better. And he did a really good job of that, particularly the second half of the year. He made some guys better.
Because you never took him out.
Well, I never took him out because we were nowhere near as good when he did come out.
I know, and then I remember seeing Parham next to you, and I thought, you're next to him, and I thought you might as well say, you're not coming out. You're playing. Stevens is playing. You guys are all playing.
Well, there was an old coach, and he got done coaching, and then he got into color commentating, and I was watching a game, and he said, I never was big on taking my best players out. They can rest on the off day.
But anyway, sorry, back to James.
We are really looking for growth from him in terms of just continuing to get more and more sturdy on the floor to be a extension of what our coaching staff is looking for our team to do so that we can be a more consistent team. We had some really, really good moments throughout the year of excellent play, but we had 14 games, Homer, 14. That with 5 minutes left in a game, it was tied, or we were up a possession, or we were down a possession that did not go our way. And the way you win those games is by added maturity, is by getting more consistent, is by making one or two more plays down the stretch. And so we need NJ to lead us in that.
And his part in that can be various different things.
Absolutely. His part in that may just be getting us more organized on the offensive or defensive end. It may be helping us shoot a better percentage from the foul line. It may be helping us value the ball and not turn the ball over. He's obviously terrific penetrating and passing and getting to the basket, But trust me, there's all kinds of basketball areas where he wants to get better, and those are what we're going to work at.
Not as coach, but as a basketball person. In what way did he wow you the most?
Honestly, his resiliency over the course of the season and his ability to kind of hang in there through challenging times and just keep getting better and better. He is a rare guy who he's most resilient during the game. We've all been around a million athletes that are really good after the game or the next day at bouncing back and saying what they needed to do better or course correcting later on. He's really good in a moment of just kind of finding within him what he needs to be and then going and being that.
And did you anticipate that? Did you see that and say that can happen at Marquette?
Well, he played at a very, very high level high school situation, Long Island Lutheran, Lehigh. His team was the second best high school team in the country behind Cooper Flags, a high school team. And I watched him his senior year be the best player on the floor in a game where they beat the Boozer Twins. So he was used to playing against excellent, excellent players and excellent teams. His backcourt mate his junior year was VJ Edgecombe, who was the number four pick in the draft last year.
Very good.
So one thing that a lot of fans don't understand is the difference between the high school situations that some of these guys come from compared to other guys is night and day. Michael Phillips went to a normal high school basketball situation where you or I would have gone to, where, you know, there's not a lot of recruiting of players. You kind of get who you get. You play against other people like that. And it's completely different than Nigel James Jr., who he played in a national high school basketball league that every Friday and Saturday he was playing games on TV. So it's a completely different dynamic.
Can we take a quick break? I want to ask about all the new players, because everybody's going to say, why didn't you ask Shaka about this?
Absolutely.
All right. Round two with Shaka Smart next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
It is the Shaka Smart Hour, and now, whatever he wants to talk about, but if not, then it's about all the new players that you can tell us whatever you want and start however you want.
I'll start with our two freshmen.
Okay.
Ethan Johnston from Queens, New York, and Alex Egbuanu from just on the other side of Massachusetts in New Hampshire. And these two are two true freshmen coming in. They start their Marquette careers, start in summer school, start on the court with us on this coming Monday. Super excited about him. Ethan Johnson's a 6'7 guard, really good size, athleticism, brings a lot to the table from the standpoint of cutting, handling the basketball, attacking the rim. He's someone that, as he gets stronger and better with his aggressiveness, will do a great job attacking closeouts. And then Alex Egbuanu is someone that, Homer, you're going to love his body. He's 240 pounds at 6'6". So he is put together.
He comes a little more highly touted. Is that correct?
He does. Yeah, he is one of the more highly touted guys.
So did he play on a high school like Nigel James?
No, but he did play at a prep school, the New England prep school. So he played against a pretty good level of competition. Not quite like Nigel James. But he's someone that can score the basketball. He can put the ball in the basket in a lot of different ways. He's by far the all-time leading scorer at his prep school. And he has this big chest and big upper body that guys bounce off of him, which is great because we need that. You know how typically we got a lot of guys that are skinny and we got to get them stronger over time with Todd Smith in the weight room. He's coming in at 240. So he's bringing a lot of power and toughness with him from day one.
You had some players that redshirted last year. I'm incapable of comprehending how any kid would redshirt. If you don't want me to play, I'm going to go play somewhere else and play, make a little money, and then depending on how I play, maybe I'll come back with you next year. I don't understand, unless somebody's getting the same amount that they would get not to play as they're getting to play, which I thought must have been the way for that point guard at Purdue. But either way, How do you do it? What am I missing in terms of the dynamics of the ability and need and want to play immediately at some level to improve and show that I could play at a higher level?
Well, sometimes that decision to redshirt isn't made until they arrive, after they've arrived.
Okay.
And once you get into the preseason and you're getting ready to start games and it's clear that they're a ways away from being in the rotation. In other cases, like Nash Walker, the young Australian player we have from Tasmania, he came at the semester. So it didn't really make sense for him to come in late December and try to, you know, get into the games. He had to get his feet under him. And in a lot of ways, he was coming a semester early like they do in football. If they end up changing the rules like they are talking about doing, where players will have 5 years post high school graduation to play college basketball, then basically redshirting will go away because guys will be able to play for 5 years. If they want to play for all 5 years, they can play for 5 years. If they wanted to take a year where they didn't play, i.e. redshirt, they could, but they don't get another year back on the back end. So I think that rule is probably going to change this summer, whether people like it or not, and it will lead to even more guys transferring because, let's say you go somewhere and you're there 4 years and you get your degree, you know, most guys are going to be thinking, well, you know, let me try something different. But, you know, just like anything else, our job is to evolve and learn. And if we got really good players that want to be part of our program for 5 years, then that's a positive too.
And part of the wish is that they can transfer only once, right? Or you can transfer once without sitting out a year, or I don't know which.
Well, that was the original intention when they changed the rule. But what's occurred in our industry is 1,000,001 lawsuits where even if that's what the NCAA intended, people go to the courts and they find judges, particularly local judges, that grant them injunctions. I mean, if you think about a judge that happened this past year in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, do you think he's going to rule in favor of trying to get someone eligible at the University of Alabama? Yes, he is. And so everywhere around the country that's occurred, and it's made it very, very difficult for the NCAA to restrict any type of transferring without playing right away.
All right, back to the team. Adrian Stevens seems like a Stevie Mitchell hit to me. Got really, really important and seems like is that anywhere close or fair?
Hugely important. Stevie's one of one. But Adrian has that type of ability.
He could live in the neighborhood, though his house might not be.
He can live in a neighborhood, and in some ways he can be better. He can shoot better. He is a little bit bigger. But Stevie had this unbelievable, as you know, Homer, energy to him. And what we need from Adrian is a consistent, high, positive energy that he's giving his teammates. Adrian, like Stevie, is a thinker. He's someone that is very, very cerebral. And so sometimes that gets him in trouble because he's almost overthinking and he goes inward. We need him to be, as we say, lost in the fight and go outward to his teammates, give them great energy. But make no mistake about it, Homer, he has a chance to be someone that starts for 4 years at Marquette. If we and he can stay aligned and he can stay in this program for that long, and if he does that, he's going to be someone that's an all-time great guard as part of this program.
And James and Stevens, and I say Parham just in the same.
Yes. Those three guys have an opportunity to be all Big East players.
And explain what Parham was, what he's become, and what you want him to be.
Well, he gained so much self-belief from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. And that's why you saw him play so much better. He's one of those guys, he really takes things very literally, Homer. And that's actually not a bad thing sometimes. There were a couple games where we set very specific goals, and he got exactly that goal. One game it was 8 deflections, and he got exactly 8 deflections. One game it was 5 offensive rebounds, and he got exactly 5 offensive rebounds. Now you might say, well, do that every game. It's not necessarily exact every single game, but one of the things that really helped him was saying in front of the team, we have to get Royce upwards of 15 field goal attempts in this game. He liked to hear that in front of the team, and it was an emphasis to get him the ball and put him in positions to score.
What's he best at?
Scoring. He's best at scoring, and he's especially best at scoring in the paint, particularly when he's able to get to a matchup where he has a physicality or size advantage. And that's where when you play him at the four spot or he's being guarded by a smaller guy, not a center, but a four-man or a guard after switching, he can really exploit that.
And my last question. So everybody sees you as a bit of an intellectual, which I think is appropriate. But I've said there's no coach that's ever been at Marquette more competitive than you are. I don't think anybody wants to win. I can't imagine what this last season was like for you. Just, I hate losing.
Yes.
So much. And yet you carry yourself in a certain way that people don't observe it as they do with the coach at UConn.
You observe it, though.
Yeah.
Maybe you see something that other people don't, Homer. Let me tell you this. When I played, I internalized losing so much that I didn't talk to people for 2 days after a loss. And it was, looking back on it, it was very immature and it was very self-absorbed because, you know, other people have things going on in their lives too. And, you know, you're so caught up in just the game. But I've always, Homer, for better or worse, overly identified with, particularly when it's a negative result. Usually the positive results, I kind of move on. Like, I'm not a big, you know, dwell on, hey, we won that game. You know, just kind of, because there's always something else coming next. But for me, the competitive fire that I feel has never been stronger. And coming off of last season, I've got a countdown in my head. It doesn't need to be written down anywhere in terms of the number of days until that ball goes up in the air at Fiserv Forum. And I'm so excited because regardless of, you know, whether, you know, and there's so many people that were so incredibly supportive last year of our team and our players and specifically me, I'm so appreciative of them. But regardless of whether it's those type of folks or people that maybe felt another way, can't wait to be with them together in Fiserv Forum in November 2nd and beyond. But there's no question about it. It's a little bit of an obsession. Ask my wife or daughter. They'll tell you about it. They'll tell you about how our house is different after a win versus after a loss.
Talking with Shaka Smart, you get the final words. Whatever you want to say last and leave with the people that are listening now or will listen when they can to hear what you have to say.
Well, I'll end by talking about our two transfers because you asked about the new guys and I talked about our incoming high school guys. But I do think it's important for us to talk about our two transfers because, to your point, that is somewhat of a deviation from not taking transfers for close to 5 years. Sananda Frew is 6'11", 255 pounds. He arrives this week, was in Berlin, Germany, visiting his home after being at Louisville the last year. He's someone that the two things that he does best, Homer.
And it is correct. He has just 1 year left, or is that not correct? Is that iffy?
It's 1 year.
Okay.
But maybe it could be two.
Okay, sorry,
we'll
go
see.
Back.
The two things he does best are rebound the basketball and make layups around the basket and or dunks. We'll take either, 2 points. And those were the two things, basketball-wise, that we identified that we needed most at that position, rebounding and finishing around the basket. There was other things as well, but those were the two biggest things. In addition to that, we feel like he's a very good cultural fit with what we value. We knew in a transfer portal we couldn't just go take any guy and put him next to Nigel James Jr. or Adrian Stevens or Royce Parham or Demarius Owens or Michael Phillips. These are guys that are still foundational parts of our program. So you can't put any species next to another species. You have to be smart about that. And we feel that way about Sonny. And then Nolan Minasali, I am so excited about him. In some ways, we just kind of got fortunate that here's a young man that grew up going to Marquette games. Can you guess, Homer?
Yes.
He just got done with his sophomore year, so you can kind of project the age and go back, you know, 8-10 years, can you guess who his favorite all-time Marquette player was growing up going to Marquette games?
So it would have been before Kolick?
Yes.
Wesley Matthews?
Marcus Howard.
Marcus Howard.
So if you think about it, when he was, you know, 10, 12 yeah. years old, Marcus Howard was scoring 40-plus.
Did he say the most important thing Marcus Howard ever did at Marquette?
He didn't.
I'll have to talk to him about that.
What is it?
40 points and a half.
Well, that's what I was just saying. Yeah, when Marcus Howard was scoring 40 and a half.
Against a nationally ranked team.
Nolan Minasali was in the building with his parents,
wow.
both Marquette grads, and dreaming of playing at Fiserv Forum. So when you talk about a fit and a match, it's pretty special. And we're excited about the toughness and, you know, two-way ability, defense and offense, and competitiveness and ability to get in the paint. Nolan Minasali and Nigel James Jr. last year were two of the top eight players in the country at the guard position getting to the rim. Now those guys are teammates, and we're really excited about that.
Thanks for the time. Anytime you want.
Homer, I'm grateful for you. Can't wait to see you in 159 days.
I don't think you will. Jason Wilde next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
All Packers all the time with Jason Wilde. Jason Wilde on the Jason Wilde Yingling Hotline. Yep, he has his own hotline. Good afternoon, Jason.
Yes, I do. And unlike Yingling, which is 197 years old and six generations family owned and operated, D.G. Yingling and Son, Pottsville, PA, enjoy responsibly. You are not 197. You're about 100 years behind.
Yep.
But you have your own hotline on our show called the GOAT.
Yeah.
Yingling Hotline.
All right. We talked yesterday about Josh Jacobs, but now I'm even more confused. Because the Brown County DA said he was not prepared to make a formal charging decision. So does that mean that Josh Jacobs was charged or he wasn't charged? Because that sounds like he wasn't charged.
Yeah, he was preliminarily charged. He was arrested on these five charges. That's what the police filed
preliminarily
to the Brown
charges.
County DA.
Okay, now.
Right, and then the DA decides
whether
to pursue those charges or not. And as the DA explains in the press release that we all received, there is a different threshold for arrest versus actual moving forward with the case.
I guess I've never heard of preliminary charges. I guess I would have assumed in the past
you wouldn't
be aware of that, and then you'd hear that someone was brought in, and then nothing occurs until he's actually formally charged. Am I close?
Yeah, I was going to call my buddy David Gruber and ask him for his insight. My understanding is this is not typical where a DA would look at the case brought by the police department, which in this case is the Hobart Lawrence Police Department, and say, this needs more investigation. We believe that there is more evidence to be collected here. And that would jibe with what Josh Jacobs' attorneys obviously said in their statement.
But then he would, in that situation, Jason, he wouldn't necessarily be arrested.
I mean, again, the threshold for being arrested versus the threshold for being charged is lower.
All right.
And the officers believed, and I think this is, look.
Someone was at risk.
I would argue that you should always err on the side of arresting the guy if there has been an incident. Right? Instead of, you know, imagine how, like...
But wait, they arrested him like 3 days after it occurred.
Well, he did not... Yeah, that's another great point. They didn't arrest... He turned himself in on Tuesday.
Yeah, and it happened on Saturday.
And it happened on Saturday. Again, I would just say this, and again, I don't think this is anything to be trifled with and downplayed, but it does bring into question whether or not there is more to this story, which it would appear there is, otherwise they would have charged him today. it makes me wonder if there's more to the story about the relationship, about the circumstances. Again, anyone who puts their hands on their partner in a violent manner, that is a despicable act.
Yep.
I'm not in any way excusing it. There does appear to be at least some reason to question what exactly happened, how it played out, and why the DA is choosing not to, because I think to your point, generally speaking, if you're arrested on charges, I think it's unusual for the DA to choose not to pursue those charges after you've been arrested and spent the night in jail.
Yes. Oh, and granted, it's his attorney. We remain confident that once all of the evidence is gathered and evaluated, it will confirm that no charges should be brought against him in the future. And I would emphasize that would mean no charges, period, because there
Correct.
Have been
Related
no charges
right.
at this point.
Right.
All right.
Yep.
Is
yep.
there anything else?
That, and,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, again, and look, I think it's important to be sensitive of, you know, they don't name victims in cases like this. Now, there is enough of a trail of evidence in his social media and this woman, Ash Cash.
Is that in fact the woman?
No. Yeah. What I'm saying is that they definitely had a relationship. Whether or not, you know, he could have been involved with some other woman as well, right? And this could be some other woman. We have no
yes.
idea. But I do think that, you know, there have been a few different people that have questioned, you know, if there's more to the story. And again, if he did something awful, he deserves to be punished for it. And I do think this is the other important thing. I know you got to play catch up because you talked.
No, we don't. We don't have to play catch up.
Oh, you don't.
You can you can go until 7 o'clock if you want talking about this.
I'll
pay
just
the
be
price.
Talking to you in Strofe, though. I would caution though that even if these charges are dismissed or never brought, I should say, because they haven't been brought to this point. Even if these charges end up not being brought and he is free to go and there's nothing further in the legal system, he can still be suspended by the NFL. Their threshold is lower. They may decide to suspend him for violating the personal conduct policy that the league has. There have been other players who were involved in domestic abuse situations.
But any that were never charged. And still,
yeah, that's the question, right? And
yes.
that's why we're in kind of a gray area.
Okay.
There are plenty that were never convicted or never accepted a plea deal or any of those things. But I don't know how this today's wrinkle changes that.
I don't know that I have anything to ask.
Yeah, I would just say this to you, though. Like, this is what I mean. Like, again, I'm not saying that he has been exonerated here. That's not what I'm saying. But the way they handled it today and the way LaFleur spoke literally minutes before this announcement was made by the Brown County District Attorney's Office, and I'm not saying LaFleur's comments would have been different, but in retrospect, this is not looking quite the same as it did 24 hours ago. And if that's the case, I still disagree with you and believe that there were plenty of players that could have spoken on football-related topics without having to close the locker room.
I agree, but this issue was only that thought. The disagreement we have is just about one
what
day.
What about now? Like,
what about one? No, one
Mossy
day.
Aid.
It's 4 o'clock. It was the first time it came out. This is one day. And Jason, this is an insignificant, and we attempt to make it important, whatever practice they call it, for one day. Happened at 4. Guys,
yeah,
we're off limits for one day, and then...
But they're off limits all the time. We have not talked to the players yet this year.
Right.
If I had talked to them last week, I would have been fine with saying, okay, fine. I don't agree with it, but you close the locker room. We haven't talked... I haven't talked to Jaden Reed. I haven't talked to Matthew Golden. I haven't talked to
right.
any of the guys that
and you got screwed,
free agency.
Jason. You got screwed. It's just
the
a
fans
rare.
Got screwed.
No, they don't. Come on, it's May.
They still want to hear from. We haven't talked. Zaire Franklin and Javon Hargrave signed like 2 months ago.
The defensive coordinator was hired 8 years ago,
right.
and he hasn't talked.
Isn't
come
isn't
on?
There's a theme developing here.
No, I believe you're right. But you just, it's one day. Now, I assume, I don't know when they're around, but.
I don't know when they're going to make it up to us. I want my day back.
I would agree. Yes. I'll support you on that. You want me to protest around Lambeau Field? I will. Jason Wilde wants his
get
day back.
Get your picket sign.
Yes, yeah. I will. No, you get it. I'm not doing any of that work. I'll show up.
I'll make it for you.
You make it for me and tell me when you want me around Lambeau Field. I'd prefer it be sometime around 5 so I can do my show after that. But you know they won't, and that's the bad.
Maybe they will. Maybe we'll have two availabilities next week. I don't know. All I'm saying is this was, as it turned out, as the way things have played out in the last 24 hours, I'm not sure that the approach today was justified.
I believe that you will say that even more strongly sometime in the future.
Okay, I tend to agree.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Jason.
All right, Homer, take care. Be good.
Let me know, mate, when you got the sign done. Jason wants his day back walking around Lambeau Field. Yeah. Next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
My thanks to Shaka Smart and also Jason Wilde. Yeah, I don't entirely understand how things occurred. And I would say no one knows what's going to happen, but I would say the majority of people believe there's a greater chance now than they thought a day ago that Josh Jacobs won't miss any games for the Packers. That's not saying he will. That's not saying I know anything. All I know is it just seems odd that you're charged, but no, wait, you weren't charged. And I guess I just think back of other past situations and wonder how much of what went public in general wouldn't go public or as much until the DA announces that so-and-so has been charged with something. Because I thought, and I think people, you could probably blame the media to some degree that certain phrases were said or whatever, like they're charged, but not charged. How is that? Well, I think it may be a situation that's out of the norm, but we'll see. Milwaukee weight loss. I did it because someone told me it's almost easy. You'll be amazed how it works. They were 100% right. So I started at 229. I'm now at 205. I could get down to 200 if I want. I don't know. And I can do this. I hope I keep doing this month and in 3 months and in 6 months because I'll be at the same weight. I eat less and I'm happy eating less. Is that not the definition of a weight loss program that works? And there's nothing special. There's no intense workouts. There are no prepackaged meals, bars, shakes, no counting calories, not taking a pill, not taking a shot. You don't do anything. Just this is how you eat, which a lot of weight loss programs do it. But will you do it and then say, yeah, it works? And it does. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, 262-235-3980. How you do it and work it out may be slightly different than the way I've done it, but the original 60 days, it's pretty much the approach they have. So then after 60 days, you quit. No, I haven't. And I don't know how many days it now. It's probably 4 months. And as I said, I look forward not just to telling you this now, but in 3 months, guaranteed. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, 262-235-3980. And Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin, I tell you about them so you'll like me. That's not first on the list, but it's on the list, so it goes like this. If you haven't taken advantage of them, you don't know about Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin, then you go there and you realize how good they are. How are they this good? Part of it is it's a family business owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are, and they still own the business, and they still work on the cars. So imagine how many years they've been doing it. One of the reasons they're so good. So when people go there, Fisco Auto Body and Forest Home in Franklin, expert workmanship guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Any damage, Fisco has you covered. They like it and say, wow. And then at some point, different times, they go, Homer. Wait, I got to thank Homer. He's the one who told me about Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. Fisco, Fisco, Fisco. Man, 30 to 1, I had a chance to get the Brewers to win the World Series. Probably 15 to 1 now. If I'm really selfish, I need a slump. Because it isn't going to change what I think I'm as long as the young pitching is good. I need a slump to get it back to 30-1. But yes, the Milwaukee Brewers could win the World Series this year for the first time in the history of the team. The analysis of, Giannis's brother, next. You do make sure you do it right.